Hello, this is Janet Gallen with Love Letters Live. Welcome. We have somebody wonderful again for you all to hear from. Her name is Minerva Gale Hawkins, and we just met, and she's walked in actually with a couple of letters, which I know you're going to treat us to reading later, at least in part, right?
Right.
And I know that you're a poet.
Yes.
And you just said something a minute ago about National Geographic, and I can see there's a whole bunch of course I don't know. And the interesting thing about people is, you know, until they tell you, you don't know.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So tell us about you. You said you were born in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I was born in Philadelphia. Went to school there, went to college. I'm a graduate of Temple University. Hello, all alums. There's like 4,000 of us here. And also, I got my graduate degree from the University of Massachusetts.
In?
Cultural anthropology and mass media. So now I have all these accents. I lived in D.C. when I worked for National Geographic. I packed my cat and haven't yet when I went to UMass. And on and on.
Now tell me about National Geographic.
But that was my dream job, actually, because I actually was there thanks to my anthropology.
Yeah.
And it was the perfect spot. And I was a researcher on children's books.
Wow.
And mostly animals. So the librarians would tease me. What do you want today? Do you want mice or marsupials?
Oh, it's the marsupials. You know that. I mean, Australia is just like a heaven land for unusual.
Yes. The first book I did, I did 50 by the time I retired, somewhere around
there.
So
you wrote them for children, you're saying?
I researched them from title to print, working with photographers, writers, artists.
So it's being a producer, essentially, if you were to translate that into...
Well, I would translate it by saying editorial.
Uh-huh.
We were an editorial team, and we kind of interlocked. There was a procedure. We spent a year on a 32-page book.
Wow.
Because the pictures... National Geographic.
Yeah. Oh, I bet they're beautiful. I'm going to look into those.
Yes.
Now, you are primarily in your heart and soul a poet. Did that override?
Yes.
Is that since childhood? I mean, when did you?
Yes. I started writing when I was 8 years old. So I taught for 20 years, and I would tell the kids that I'm not sure I picked poetry. Well, actually, I didn't pick poetry. I wouldn't have because I was on my own at a young age and I had rent to pay.
And you what? Oh, rent,
had
oh,
rent
to earn
to pay.
A living.
That's
saying.
Right.
Of course,
to
of
earn
course.
A living, yeah.
Sure.
Still. So there was always that dual diagnosis professional. But the poetry could not be denied. My parents encouraged it. My first
What did your parents do in life?
My parents, well, first of all, they died very young. Mm-hmm. So I don't, it's just some blanks that are, actually they're getting filled in as we speak, Janet.
Nice.
Because I just moved to the area from San Diego. And as far as unpacking, guess where I'm at in terms of my unpacking? Pictures and letters.
Yes. Isn't that?
Pictures and letters. And I found the letter that this morning, I read it on the way over riding, a letter from my dad to my mom proposing to her. And so, you know, my parents died 3 months apart, and they were very young. I was living in a foreign country at the time. I was an exchange student in Rome, and I went back and forth, back and forth. And people would say, oh, they loved each other dearly, so forth. And I would get upset because I would say, well, you're talking about people who are 80 and 90, not 52.
Oh, and what's 23?
Yeah, 12. I mean, all the way down, I lost a son, play son. He was 12, and he had more sense than anybody I knew. And I lost my poetry daughter and she was 21, Alex and Angela.
When you say your poetry daughter.
Yeah. Angela Boyce was a young slam poet, they call them, competitive. Mm-hmm. Very talented, very good, University of California, San Diego. And I happened to read an interview about her, and she said, I want to thank my poetry mother, Minerva. So I said, well, I guess that means that she's my poetry daughter, so
adoption is complete.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Uh-huh. And so, you know, the magic, the sorrow and the heart all in one at the same time, I ended up speaking at her funeral. Mm-hmm. And so there's always been this sense of loss that poetry addresses. And my students were often more than happy to be able to express feelings like depression, loneliness, missing.
Now, when you say you taught for 20 years, is that mm-hmm. what you taught, poetry?
Yes, I taught poetry as a residency. I was in and out of schools and prisons. Mm-hmm. I was poet in residence for the state of Maryland for 3 years and travel. And then here in California Poets in the Schools, beautiful. One of the biggest, largest, oldest artists in residence programs in the United States.
Oh, nice to know about that.
And I went all through the state of California teaching kids poetry, helping them get published. And we edited 2 volumes of children's poetry from the state of California, border to border.
Oh, I'm going to have a lot to look into. Okay. Yeah. Because, you know, poems to me have always been just the trimmest form of short story with no extra blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. And it would just come to me. I think it's been interesting. My most successful poems were the ones that I didn't work on so hard.
That just came?
Yeah, I would actually hear them and sort of transcribe. The first story I ever wrote, I was 8 years old. I still remember. It was called The Flight of the Balloon People. And it wasn't a poem. To me, it was a story. And it was about a sickly child that balloons came up to her sick room window and played with her. Yep. And that was me.
Did you spend time ill as a child?
Yes, I did. Yeah, right. I did. The allergies, all the childhood stuff. Okay. And things that are not here anymore, you know, so maybe it informed me.
Now, poetry as a form has changed markedly since, you know, the mid-1800s and the early 1900s and now. How would you define it?
Oh,
what makes a poem today?
To me, a poem today, as always, a message and a look, an observation.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, a valid observation from whomever it was that wrote it. Not necessarily a poet. I happen to have published and made, you know, somewhat of a living, so forth. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people write poetry, and I would talk to them in, say, in prisons. I ran into a lot of people that had been writing since they were teens.
Really?
Yeah. And they're, like, in a trunk under a bed somewhere. And they're just treasures. My students, I told you I'm unpacking.
Yeah.
I unpacked a bunch of old letters written in 1999 from some students, which means they're 17 years older now.
Yes.
And so, Jen, it's funny. I'm tracking down people through letters right now.
Oh, wonderful. That's a wonderful thing to do. So you want to send them back what they wrote so they can see, or what?
Well, I had a big interruption of 15 years of a spinal injury
that left
me homebound, yes. And it's true when they say when you lose your health, you lose everything, including friends. I lost track of several people. And I've been reaching out to them by letter.
Oh, good. Yeah. Okay. Uh-huh. And letters do it.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So you have these people's addresses. I mean, there's some research that goes into recouping your own life.
Google.
Oh, yes. Okay. Good.
I mean,
yes.
You know, it's like the phone book. You
yes.
know, and
it
a
is
lot
the
of my
phone book, right.
Yeah,
for sure.
And a lot of my friends were academics.
Okay.
So I find them at the colleges, you know, and
now can we talk for a minute about the letter that you found your father proposed to your mother?
Yes, yes.
Talk about that for a minute.
Okay.
Because you know, we know our grandparents and our elderly parents as old people.
Yeah.
And what I must say, one of the things I do workshops on writing love letters, and sometimes people want to know, you know, how sexy can I be if I'm writing a romantic one? And yes, as sexy as you want, and because it's just between you and one other person.
Now it's between me.
That's right. So, and that's right. In another generation, your grandchildren are going to find it. And you know what? Let them learn a little something about Granny.
That's right.
She wasn't always an old woman.
Oh, I learned a stunning thing about my dad. That he was the romantic in the relationship.
And you wouldn't have known that from day to day?
Oh, no. And not only that, but I just started reading these letters because my last sibling passed away last year. And now it's me. And to carry on and so forth. My parents have been dead for well over 40 years, and I remember splitting the letters with my sisters, and I don't know why, I just never read them until like the last month or so. I just grab a stack, and by the 10th one, I totally got why they left the planet together, young, old. I totally get it now.
But that's interesting how you can know where things are and you don't reach for them until the day you do.
Yes.
And maybe that's when you're meant to read them.
Oh, I totally think so because, you know, it probably could have gone either way reading those letters of, you know.
Or if you had read them when you were younger, you wouldn't have brought to it what you now know about life and so what you can see in them.
Oh, yeah, like the fact that my father was a very handsome man, and I totally get that, too, my mother.
So you're going to read something here.
Yes.
And would you please read the date that it was written?
Yes, sure. And, you know, I get letters from Indonesia, Japan, I have friends in Europe, and sometimes they're not dated, and I'll make sure
good.
I date them.
Good. Oh, yes.
Because this one's from my dad at a army camp, and it's dated June 9th, 1942.
And it looks like it was written yesterday.
It certainly does.
Yes.
And his penmanship is amazing.
Gorgeous.
It looks like he wrote with the fountain pen, actually.
And a very fine one. So he was well educated and paid some attention to his penmanship.
Yes, which I didn't quite fill in that blank either.
This is to your mother.
Yes. And this is one I just found this morning.
Okay. My good luck.
Hello, wifey. Smile. Baby, how's that for a beginning? Well, anyway, you soon will be my sweet, adorable wife. Smile. I just finished washing some of my army clothes, so I'm answering your last letter. Honey, I'm very sorry to hear about your grandmother. Please send her my deepest regards. Maybe this will help her cheer up. Maybe she will like to hear prayer from her soon-to-be son-in-law. So, darling, don't worry too much about the matter, because the Lord will take everything in his hand and do his will. And then he goes on to talk about his friends and his friend Lucille. Does she like the idea of being married? And then she says, then he says, he's encouraging her about her job. This might not be the right one, but it says, darling, I have a swell picture to give you when I come home on furlough. I also have a surprise for you. The captain made me acting platoon sergeant. He said he was trying me out to see if I could handle the job. Do you think I can? Mm-hmm. So, darling, oh, so you want and need me, huh? Well, that goes double for me. And it won't be long before I'll be spending 24 hours with you, at least for the next 10 days. I love you more than anything in this world, and I want you to be mine forever and ever. Closing, I say, be sweet for me, okay?
That is so perfect.
That's not even the one where he proposes to her. That's probably under the stack here.
Can I just ask you to read something else? You have some of your poetry with you that you could...
Oh, yes. I
pick up something else and give us another treat here.
Well...
I didn't say what it is before you start.
So, okay,
like
well,
when it was written.
Well, I picked this poem especially because it's kind of is a letter. It's called Mother Downbeat, and it's about the lady who stepped in when my mother passed away when I was in college by simply saying, I'm your mom now.
Oh.
And so she is mom, and she is 90. And this is the next poem I probably should publish.
Yes. Now, she's 90 now?
Yes, yeah, she's 90 now. She was 90 last October, and she lives up there in the Bay Area, mm-hmm. around you guys. So I wrote a love letter to her called Mother Downbeat. Riding drums on a rhythmic journey, Mother Downbeat Bobby by my side, divine replacement for deceased mother in the parental tragedy of 1973. Love that never falls through or gives up, keeps beating, treading, teaching, beautiful, sure. Mother Downbeat Bobby, Jewish cause her mother was, and a jazz drummer cause her mother let her be, the keeper of my brief memory, my mother's piano and organ, international sweethearts of rhythm, raising cool children who understand Mother Downbeat. I came to Mother Downbeat via Philly cheesesteaks and homemade sangria in college in Rome with one of Mother Downbeat's children for classmate. I came to drummer mother via John Coltrane tunes. Mom is the best with the brushes. I know because I listened and wrote about her professionally. An employed jazz journalist on the scene. Mother Downbeat. Mother Downbeat, Philly Mother Downbeat, substitute teacher, California. After I left everything behind, we're on the same coast now, Mom. Thank God. I was slow on the uptake, Janet. Took me 30 years to love her back by beating out these praises. Generous Mom, this poetry should be a long book with comprehensive complimentary CD box set. But poets have to finish quick before pencils down, like the writers in Tinseltown. Or like when Mom Bobby had to say, sticks down, I'm 90, I'm aging, maybe not swinging as much these days. And I left behind my first writing job doing sports in 1969. I'm so glad you're here, Mom. I left Philly, Italy, and Massachusetts, D.C., and old Baltimore. I left female, painful adolescent cramps, my cane, my spinal injury, my luggage tags from our visit. I left behind the poetry I didn't get paid for. But Mother Downbeat, I love you. Mother Downbeat, Mother Downbeat. We add joy together now. We're adding joy that life is playing itself out. Joy we both have health problems. Joy we're both getting old. Joy at the side effects of meds. Joy, we don't care what people think anymore. Mother Downbeat puts me up at the Sandman Motel because of my asthma. I wish to write about her rhythms. Better to write about the beating of her heart instead. In the mail, Mother Downbeat Bobby would send me surprise books from time to time. With a couple dollars in them, though I am grown. Mm-hmm. I would love you forever, Mother Downbeat. I still do work to leave my tragedies behind. Yet as long as Mother Downbeat is mom, my numbed soul of steel heals forever.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
It's so mesmerizing. You know, you've got the two of you wound together in one story there, don't you?
Yeah. That's what struck me was that
after
it was as much about me
yes.
as her.
Yes.
I'm her child.
Yes.
She's my mom.
Yes. And also, I am very fond of repetitive Mother Downbeat, that constant, mm-hmm. almost like a heartbeat mm-hmm. of its own.
Yeah.
That is the constant refrain of, you are the one I'm talking about. You are the one in my head and my heart.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that a lot. Talk about the 30 years, if you could,
well,
for a minute, if you would.
Well, as I mentioned, both parents passed away while I was a student, mm-hmm. exchange student in Rome.
Uh-huh.
And mom's daughter was my sidekick. And my father died 2 days after I got there. And I was to be there 2 years or more, and it ended up being only 3 months because my mother had a stroke the day my father died, and she died to the date 3 months later. So when I came back to Philly the fourth time, of course, I was a mess.
Of course.
I mean, I'm 19, I'm living in a foreign country. But it taught me what the possibilities of life are. Yes, your parents can die young. Yes, you can lose your poetry daughter. But yes, you can gain friends. And I've lived in some wonderful places. And when you asked me earlier about poetry and how it's changed and maybe modern, I noticed that the more modern poetry might be a little less formed.
Right, that's what my question was.
And,
yeah.
And then certainly in my case, because I studied anthropology and communications and mm-hmm. journalism, so I didn't particularly study meter, rhyme, form in college. I certainly got to it because it is a craft. But I was a musician living in a house full of musicians. And we would clean the house on Saturdays to jazz.
Yeah,
Loneliest
yeah,
Monk, John Cole.
Yeah. Well, rhythm is a driving force. I mean, we carry it within us from conception. I mean, the rhythm of sex itself to heartbeat and every, you know, rhythm. Mm-hmm. We are rhythm-driven creatures.
Yes.
So that makes sense that you did it in an obvious way.
Mm.
You know, but even if you don't, you know, everything, some things have more obvious rhythm. So you don't have to pay as much attention to it, I think.
Okay.
And then everything has a rhythm. You know, when you read a really beautifully written book, there is a rhythm to it. This, mm-hmm. without rhyme, has a rhythm mm-hmm. that you get caught up in.
Yes.
And it carries you.
Yeah, it's funny you mention that because I just wrote an article about David Zimmerman
oh, yeah?
and Angela Rockwood. And the diversity issues in Hollywood and what they're doing to affect change. And I remember saying to Angela when I was done, I'm going to go home and listen to a bunch of music to prepare me to write this article. And she asked me what I was listening to.
I'm going to ask you the same thing.
Well, I was listening to, it turns out it's the Roots band is the house band for Jimmy Fallon's show at night, which I don't usually see.
Uh-huh.
But someone sent me a live video of them playing 4th of July outside on the near the Rocky Steps mm-hmm. in Philly. And it was just amazing. They have this guy sampling things. He has a beatbox. And there's a drummer and a percussionist doing a call response. And it's like a half hour, two-part thing. And so I said, Angela, if you like the rhythm of our article, you can thank the Roots, the legendary Roots yes. crew of yes. Philadelphia. And I told her, for me, they represent home wellness, not home sickness.
Oh, good. Oh, thank you for doing this with me. There's something wonderful, I feel, about being read. I don't like being read to as a rule, because I like being on my own on the page. But I do like having poetry read to me.
I do, too.
And there's something about the out loud of it.
Yeah, that's, I do, too.
You know, there's some cultures where it's only for out loud. And it's only responsive.
Yeah.
That makes sense. And mm-hmm. not only responsive, but the listeners can add to it or correct it or change it. It's a living thing of its own yeah. between people.
Yes. Oh. As the letters.
Yes, that too.
I unpacked letters from old students.
Yeah.
And they were saying things like, I'll be writing poetry for the rest of my life, yeah. but they're going to be love poems, and I have to write them in red ink.
Well, people are poetry.
yes.
It's a matter of people. Now, Mother Downbeat, she has a copy of this?
Yes, she framed it, actually.
Oh, good.
Yeah, but I want to see it. I want to see it in print for her. Or record it, maybe.
That is so important, by the way. Yes. I encourage that with love letters also to people. Obviously to people who have any issues with sight, you can write the letter.
Right.
But as we get older, our sight can go, and to be able to have alternative ways of hearing it, and also your voice is important. Oh, gosh.
And that's why I love being a writer, you know, paid, unpaid, working, not working, because I don't ever have to retire. My spinal injury was painful and life-altering. But for some reason, I should write about this. I didn't have a writer's block. And, wow, was that a huge blessing.
Sure. Also for the people who need to hear from you. Oh, thank you. Well, I want to say, I always say, you know, if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, writing a love letter is a special occasion. It is also your history in your own hand. And in reading this letter from your father, you're holding something that's felt the touch of his hand.
Yes.
You know, he might have held that letter to his lips before mm-hmm. he put it in the... You're holding him, in a sense.
Oh, absolutely. And my mom.
Yes, exactly.
He mentioned their soft lips.
Yes.
And so I get that, yeah. It's just... And as I said, I'm looking for people through letter. I'm filling in life by writing letters. I went to the Bay Area a lot for work, and the way I passed the time in the hotel room was writing picture postcards.
Yeah, you can always find them in the drawer.
Yeah.
They have stationery in that top drawer.
Right.
And, you know, when I stay at a hotel, it's the first thing I do is I pull out that drawer to see if they're stationery, and there still always is.
Oh.
And I wrote a letter to somebody. Just for the memory of that's what we used to do.
Yes.
That's the only thing we used to do.
Yes.
Well, will you come back and talk to us again if there's some other stage in your life that you'd like to talk about?
Or just to read
a little bit?
Oh, yeah, I would love to. I think that's the point sometimes is that people want to share their words. And that is why they write.
Yes, and, you know, selfish little me, it's certainly my point because I get to listen to it. Well, thank you, dear. Until next time, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.